cake left over. So he decided to just threw off the table.
Good evening. This is the regular Thursday, February 7th, 2019 meeting of the Harbor Advisory Board. We are meeting in the Veterans Memorial Building on Surf Street in Morro Bay. And we are all present, so we have a quorum. And so we'll call the meeting to order. And first thing off, we'll have a moment of silence, please. Not sure a moment's enough. We have a lot to think about. I don't mean here tonight so much. So, Pledge of Allegiance. Charisse?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. So the next order of business is chair, advisory board member, and liaison announcements and presentations. So I'll start off, which I don't usually do, but I'd like to let everybody know that we have a new liaison. Councilperson McPherson is with us this evening. Thank you so much for agreeing to do this, and we look forward to your participation. Also, two of our members have been reappointed by the city, Charisse Hansen and Mark Blackford. Dana McClish, and their term now ends on January 31, 2023. Oh, Charisse, that's a long time, huh? Yeah. So, having said that, so we'll start with you, Charisse. Do you have anything?
Not today.
Okay. Dana?
Yeah, I'll try and make this quick. We have two regattas in March coming up, both of them youth regattas. The first one is a collegiate Cal Poly Sailing's annual Mustang Regatta. This is a big deal for them. Get about 10 or 12 schools that come out. Each school brings probably, on the average, about six sailors, and they go back and forth with interchanging in boats. So that'll be March 2nd and 3rd. You probably see Cal Poly. They come up, kind of sail mostly right up in the area by the T-piers. During the middle of the week, you'll see them up there training. The following weekend is the 13th Annual Big Rock Regatta. This is part of a Southern California Youth Yacht Racing Association series. It's number 5 in the series. We've had up to 91 boats in Morro Bay. This is, both of these regattas are co-hosted by the Morro Bay Yacht Club. And I think last year we had about 75 boats. So that will be the following weekend, March 9th and 10th. And just put a plug in for anybody who uses the bay. We have our annual calendars that we sell. They're tide charts. Let me get February here. Anyways, you can see these. They have local photos, but they have the tide, so you can know when to launch your boat or when's a good day to put your, and what time to put your stand-up paddleboard in and go for a paddle the right way or the wrong way. You know you're going to get back to the dock. So these are very handy, local knowledge. There is no other calendar in Morro Bay like this for tide charts. And you can get these, the paddleboard company at 575 Embarcadero is carrying them. We're asking for a $20 donation. So go out and get one. Thank you.
Dane, is that the only location this year?
You can also go to mbysf.org, and they will be delivered to you. But you can stop by the Yacht Club sometimes and get them, but it's not part of the Yacht Club necessarily. It's part of the Morro Bay Youth Sailing Foundation, which is a nonprofit on its own, promoting sailing for youth throughout our county.
So paddleboard company's the best place?
They're the best place.
Okay. And in the collegiate regatta, what did you mean by trading boats?
So what happens is, I don't want to say trading boats, but crews. Say one team, one school will have so many sailors, they'll do two races, they'll come in and switch crew. Another crew from their team will get in, so they'll have, you know, an A fleet, a B fleet, and they'll go out. They'll do a lot of races in 2 days. I mean, they'll do 20 races easy. Yeah. I mean, they're not looking at long races. They're looking at starts and getting around the buoys and finishes. So last couple years, we've held it between the mooring fields. It's kind of a nice area right there. It's important in yacht racing, especially small dinghy class, for sure, is that you have a windward leeward course. And they will stop, they will postpone until they get the course right. It's got to be windward leeward. The wind shifts, I mean, they'll keep racing if it already happened after a start. But a lot of times you go out in the morning and they start setting up buoys and then the wind shifts and then they have to reset buoys and continue racing. So that's a good area to do it in. There's not a whole lot of areas in Morro Bay. We have to do the same thing for the following weekend with the Optimus class, which is the beginner boats, the little bathtubs. So that's always fun.
Okay, thank you. Mark?
I have no updates at this time.
Lynn?
Nothing.
Jeremiah?
Thank you, Ron. I'll just give a brief update on the current situation with the wind energy here off Morro Bay. It was a period for public comment, and that expired on January the 27th. So all the public comments are in. They are published currently on the BOEM, Bureau of Ocean Energy Management website. And I think there was approximately 120, give or take, comments written in. And the comments were all over the board, from not wanting it to wanting it badly to many people not even commenting on this issue, but issues in Northern California, which this was not a public comment for. So right now, the BOEM will be deciding. This is when they'll be deciding, and probably not for another few months, up to six, on who will get the contract for the wind energy project off the coast of Morro Bay here. The city of Morro Bay, the Morro Bay Commercial Fishermen, and our congressperson and the county all seem to support Castle Wind in getting this project. I hope they do personally, because they're the only ones who opted to engage with the city and the county. And I think because we'll be welcoming these people into our community, basically into our homes for an indeterminate period of time, that it will be somebody who works well in our community, as opposed to the other two companies who have chosen not to engage. And in reading the documents that were supplied, they thought that it was dealing with the, I'll paraphrase because I can't remember the exact words, but they were both along similar lines, and they determined that dealing with the community and the stakeholders was something that should be done after they get the lease. Well, if that was the case, obviously the community would have no input in who gets the lease. So I believe it is imperative that we do support Castle Wind in their endeavors, because they are the only, again, the only outfit that chose to engage our community. So now it's a waiting period. We'll be waiting for BOEM to come up with their final. This is a bid process, too, by the way. So we are hoping that the endeavors that Castle Wind has taken within the community here will be counted towards the bidding process. It's basically an auction, so remains to be seen. So I hope for the best for our community.
Jeremiah, do you happen to know from that meeting and the commercial fishermen's participation in this process to date whether BOEM will or will not count community involvement in the scoring process?
You know, I do not know. In speaking with them, it appeared at the last time, and some of us here were at the meeting in San Luis, and I did ask that question, and at that time they couldn't give me a direct answer whether they would or would not. So they have not in previous leases, and they have in previous leases. So it's up to their discretion.
Okay, thank you. Gene?
Yeah, a couple, three things. Winter's not over with yet, so make sure that your mooring lines or dock lines are secure. They're constantly wearing out and breaking. We've got more storms on the way. Second item is we have the Big Bad and Ugly Surf Contest coming up later this month. It may be big, it may be bad, and it may be ugly. And the third item is I've been involved in driving or vibrating in pilings up and down the bay for 40 years. And normally when we put in a piling or drive piling, we get down about 6 or 8 feet, and then we hit a layer of cobblestone, and that's a couple of feet thick. We will go through that, which is kind of a sandy area there. Then we get down about 15, 18 feet, and we hit a cobblestone again. So we like to penetrate the top layer and go on down to the bottom layer and lock it in through there. Well, recently we just put in a bunch of pilings at Harbor Hut, and we didn't find any cobblestone, but we did find kind of a cemented clay all the way down, maybe after 10 feet down. And I'll pass this along, but it was like rocks. It was like cement. So I thought this was kind of interesting. To me, I kind of think like the bay at one time was like a meandering river, and one part it had the cobblestone like in the middle of a creek, and then this is on the outside where the alluvial soil is cemented in. So it's just kind of interesting. This soil is probably down 20, 25 feet in the mud. One of the pilings that we did pull out from Harbor Hut, which was a driven wooden pile, was 29 feet deep in the mud. So that was pretty impressive back when the Army Corps did that, I assume. So that's my show and tell.
Okay, thank you. Ms. McPherson, do you have anything for announcements?
Is this on? Oh, it is. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the Harbor Advisory Board. I just wanted to say it's really a pleasure to be here. I specifically asked for this assignment. I really wanted to do this because I want to learn more about this. It's one of those issues that most cities don't deal with, and it's been one of the toughest ones sitting on council to really get a handle on and understand all the background. So I really appreciate the opportunity, and I just want to let you know that there are some opportunities for citizen input coming up. The first one, we will be having our Community Goals Forum March 1st, and it's at the Vets Hall here, not the Community Center, which is in your packet. So that's a correction. I just want to I verified that this afternoon to make sure we all are in the right place. Starts at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. That's a Friday. And we were very disappointed in the participation last year. We'd love to see more people come out. We'd love to see input. I'm sure you will provide input through Eric, but you're all welcome to attend that forum. Secondly, we have just started a new process to engage the public. It's called, it's a survey firm called Polco, P-O-L-C-O, and you do have to register on their website, and we will be surveying the public periodically on any issues that come up, and we are doing it with respect to goals. And so if you're interested and want to participate and want to have your voice heard, you go to polco.us/Morro Bay, and it's very easy to sign up. You just give your name, your zip code, and a password, and you're in, and then you can participate in this, in surveys on a regular basis. So I just wanted everyone to know about that, not only all of you, but the public listening. So thank you for the opportunity.
Yes, ma'am. The site address one more time, please.
polco.us/Morro Bay.
Thank you. Morro Bay spelled out, no break.
Exactly. And that takes you right to our site on their survey engine. The nice thing about Polco, I'll just add, you're probably familiar with SurveyMonkey. The problem with SurveyMonkey is that you can, anybody can just keep going on and answering questions again and again and again. That's why we you have to register here. You get to only express one opinion, your own opinion. And the other thing is that they compare the results they get to some of the demographics of the community, so we have a better sense of whether or not we're getting a good sample. So that's and they're very inexpensive. So we really do want to work on citizen engagement and getting the community more involved in our business. So thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thanks. That brings us to public comment period. Public comment for anything that is not on the current agenda or that for anyone who cannot stay for a later agenda item is welcome to come to the podium. We have one public with us. Mr. Lee, do you have anything for us at this time?
Is there enough time in this world?
Well, you have 3 minutes.
3 minutes.
Well, first thing I want to point out that...
Could you state your name, sir?
Oh, excuse me. My name is George Lee. I'm a businessman in Morro Bay. Been here for a long, long time. Anyway, I see a few things that are happening down there are bothering me. First of all, the triangular parking lot I see has now been taken away from the business people on the waterfront and turned into, I don't know. Look, it's going to go just like a walk of Washington and Astoria. Jeremy's seen a lot of this. It just becomes a junkyard. They get stuff over there now that looks just trashy. It's amazing. I understand they want to put some boats over there and start charging for them, which is, I think it's competition with other people that are doing this. I didn't know the city was involved in competing with other business people, but that's here and there. That parking lot was, we need that. We need that, and sure, we don't need it all the time, but when we need it, we need it. The business is along the waterfront brings in a lot of revenue for this town. And another thing, parking signs that it was tore down. And Bill Yates' day, he couldn't stand anything that says no. So he had all them signs turned down. That was, I think the limit parking was four, is that right, Eric, 4 hours or something?
2 hours.
2 hours? Well, whatever it was, and these people are coming down here and they're parking all day long. Right, Troy down at the harbor house really gets killed because of the sport fishing boats. They park there all day long, and there's no enforcement. This is on the books. These signs should be put back up, and they should be enforced. Because, you know, like I said, the city's supposed to be helping the business people down there. We're supposed to be working together. And we need those parking signs, limited. Some people, I mean, it's great that people park, for instance, they'll park in front of GAFCO because it's the farthest walk to the rock. But sometimes they're gone almost all day. I don't know what they do out there, but there'll be a car parked there all day long. When we had the possibility of the triangle parking across, that'd be long-term parking. That's where they should have been parking. Now, I don't know. I just figured I'm going to start here and go. I don't know why we are doing this to that triangle parking. We need it. We don't need to turn it in. And they got containers over there, big metal containers over there. They got all kinds of junk over there. And I don't know. I think you guys could take a look at that and see where it goes. Where are we going with this? So I'm going to be hammering on this until I get some answers. But let's get some signs down there and let's reevaluate that valuable parking lot there. The whole, it's not just for the three or four restaurants along in front of us. It's also people park there and walk clear down the Embarcadero. There's parking's a problem here. If you don't, you might not know that, but it is. I think Sharice up there could tell you that. All right, that's it.
Mr. Lee, thank you for using this forum to express your concerns. I will share with you that the parking areas that you're talking about and are legitimately concerned about are not the province of the Harbor Advisory Board.
I understand that.
Oh, okay, sure.
Just started here.
That's fine. So I would encourage you to have the same discussion with Mr. Collins.
Yes, I will.
I'm sure you will.
But I just thought I'd like to let everybody know.
I'm happy to have you.
Okay. It was really nice being here.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, there's no one else in our audience this evening here with us, so we'll close public comment at this time. And that brings us to our consent calendar. Item A1 is approval of the minutes from the Harbor Advisory Board meeting that was held on November 1, 2018. So I need a motion to approve, and then I'll ask if there are any inputs.
I will move to approve.
Second?
Second.
Okay, moved and seconded. So any discussion? Is there anything that anyone would like to see a little different than the way it's listed? Okay, I see none. Call the question. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Carries. A2, approval of minutes from the Harbor Advisory Board meeting held on December 6th, 2018. Motion?
I'll make the motion.
Okay.
I'll second.
Okay, moved and seconded. Any discussion, any corrections or notations? Seeing none, call the question. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Carries. That brings us to item B, which is reports and appearances, and that's the Harbor Department status report. I won't ask for public comment because we don't have any public still with us here this evening. So, Harbor Director, you're on.
Thank you very much. Start off with the usual department activity over the last, I guess it's 2 months now. We didn't have a meeting in January. 21 emergency responses, 300 plus calls for service, a bunch of assist to other agencies, enforcement contacts, 32 of those, 36 weather warnings, and 8 hazardous barb warning days. So as we know, as Gene mentioned, we're still in winter. It looks like we're actually getting a winter this time, which is great. So far, knock on wood, haven't had a lot of big major issues because of the weather. Most of the storms have kept the wind down below 60 knots, which is pretty good. And it's been at night when no one's around to see anything. So unless something goes really bad, we don't hear about it. So it's not been too bad. But those hazardous bar days, like anything, it's been affecting the commercial fishermen, especially the weather, not just Hasbar days, but just the weather in general. It's been pretty nasty out, so guys trying to get out and fish, it's been rough on them, but I guess it's a trade-off. We need the water, so we get one or the other. We participated with Port St. Louis some oil spill response training. We brought one of our boats down there, along with the Coast Guard and Fish and Wildlife, together laying out some absorbent boom in the water and some blocking boom, just doing some basic training with those two agencies or those three agencies. Just one, to work together with them and get familiar with them and their operations, and also two, to work with the equipment, because as you know, when you've got some piece of equipment that you haven't used for a long time and you pull it out, a lot of times you kind of forget how to use it. So keeping up on our training on that and keeping that stuff in the water and usable. So it was a good exercise we did down at Port San Luis. Light a boat parade held over a couple different nights. I think by all means it was a pretty good success. This year we didn't endeavor to put everybody in a particular order with their numbers, as we've done in the past, which has always been a bit of a scramble at the beginning. We just let everybody go freeform, kind of in the order that they were more or less lined up, and the judging could look at their numbers and figure out what number they were and went from there, and I think it worked just fine. It was well attended, beautiful night. I think we had a little threat of weather, but I think it abated by the time the parade came around. I mentioned again the hazardous bar days. We've had some really big surf. A lot of the sand has disappeared off the beach. So the beach is obviously lower and the water goes up higher. So when we get these high tide events, which we get typically in the wintertime, coupled with big swells and or storms, just people just be aware out on the beach that, you know, don't turn your back on the ocean. The old saw about previously dry areas, just be aware that the beach can be a dynamic place, so keep your eyes open. We've got some grant funding from Boating Waterways for vessel demolition, which we've been getting for a good number of years now. We just demoed another 7 boats over the last couple of months to the tune of about $14,000, which just about expends the grant that we have from DBW now. We'll be reapplying, and that grant cycle starts again in April. So that's kind of our anti-boating element of our department, getting rid of the dead wood, so to speak. Coast Guard went through a shutdown. I want to recognize all the citizens and folks that came forward with food and funding and help and assistance and care to the Coast Guard in their time of need when they were not getting paid but still being required to work. We'll see what happens come next week if we're facing another shutdown, but just want to reach out on behalf of the Coast Guard and thank everybody that stepped up and helped out the Coast Guard folks get through that time, and their dedication. And they really didn't miss a beat. They didn't. Nobody was off duty. They were all on duty, and they were doing everything they normally do, which was great. It was pretty inspiring. Gene mentioned again, check all your mooring lines. We've unfortunately not had a lot of boats break loose. People kept up on things pretty well. We do patrols through before and after storms and make sure things are in decent shape and point things out or double up on lines if we see things need to be double up on. Pump your boats out, pump your skiffs out. We get a number that sink when boats get filled up with rain and don't get pumped out. So I just need to watch out for that. On January 1st, we provided the water safety for the Cayucas Polar Bear Dip. Partnership we've had since that event's inception, probably 18, 20 years ago now, maybe even longer. It's really a good training tool for us. We bring some of our lifeguards up there, our Harbor Patrol, usually our jet skis, and do some water rescue training. We've had years past where there absolutely have been rescues needed because of the conditions. Last year, or this year, was actually not bad. Conditions were pretty good. And that event has grown. It's probably a few thousand people that jump out in the water now. It's pretty amazing. January 11th, we had a commercial fishing boat decide it wanted to run into the North Jetty after a transmission failure. It seems uncanny. I think back the 25 years I've been here, and boats coming in the harbor, boats leaving the harbor, between steering problems and transmission problems, it, for some reason, more often than not, it seems to happen right within the vicinity of the harbor mouth. It's strange. It's like the Morro Bay Triangle. So, fortunately, that boat was on the inside. They were just doing some trial runs, doing some engine runs. They went up on the rocks pretty well. Steel boat, built pretty thickly, I would assume, because it didn't get holed, but did get a little bit of damage. We were able to get it towed off. The Coast Guard and Harbor Patrol responded, and we were able to pull them back off backwards, and they got back out to the pier where they started. So, fortunately, that one ended up well. Could have been a lot worse. With a new year, remind all boaters to make sure the registration and registration stickers are up to date on their boats. A lot of our enforcement numbers on the first page were from us going around and checking and make sure everybody's got their boats registered and everything paid for in stickers. A lot of folks will get their boats registered and pay, and they won't necessarily put the stickers on, so make sure you're putting those on, that your boats are all up to date. And over in the Triangle lot, much to Mr. League's dismay, we're offering boat storage over there, $100 a month, for boaters to put their trailer boats out there and store them in a long-term basis. You can contact the Harbor Department for details on that. Plenty of spaces available. We don't have very many in there now. And you can include boats, sailboats can store them, boats in there with their mast up as well, if folks want to set them up that way. Any questions on any of those?
I was just wondering, because Mr. League mentioned that we were in the business of renting spaces. Are there other established places that rent, and is that the fair market value, $100 per month?
We're actually a little above what most folks are charging. So Frank Smith property is over by more by the old Marbay RV where they used to be over there on Main Street. He's got boat and RV storage. There's a couple little parking lot or empty lots in town, one on Marina Street that charges for storage as well. And we researched all those, and the number we put at 100. The average, I think, when we did this last year, I want to say it was in the mid-80s, maybe $80, $85. And so we set it purposefully a little bit higher so that we weren't undercutting the private sector. And we believe, you know, we're offering waterfront, and especially for boats with masts up, there's nowhere else that can be done but on the waterfront. Lynn?
Yeah, I have a question about the hazardous bar warnings. I know you put up the sign that says rough bar, but how do you distinguish that, or how do you communicate it to boaters when there is actual a closure and you are prohibited by the Coast Guard from leaving or crossing the bar and at risk for that big fine that they can impose if they so choose?
That's going to be a Coast Guard function. I think they've only recently acquired that authority.
I posted the sign at the Yacht Club probably 2 years ago.
And that's recently.
Okay.
Historically, I consider that recently. Yeah, I think it wasn't last winter, it was winter before. Coast Guard Captain of the Port in Long Beach, which has authority over Moore Bay, gained that authority to be able to physically prevent boats, legally prevent boats from coming or going. We're the only district on the West Coast that didn't have that before. The districts to the north, D13, I think, does have that. But that's a Coast Guard function. As I recall, they've used it, I want to say once, maybe twice. And as I recall, they put announcements out on the radio. They print it in the notice to mariners, obviously, and I think we had copies of it, and we spread around to the launch ramp and other places as much as we could, the noticing as well, and just to let folks know. And then if we see people in transit, obviously going out, we'll go run them down and make sure they're aware of what's going on.
Okay. Can they go to the city website and find that if somebody is planning a trip and wants to know if there is a warning?
That's something we could put on the city's website. I don't believe we did when that one time it was closed.
Mm-hmm. they issue those warnings on Channel 16, and any time there's any inclement mm-hmm. weather, hopefully, mm-hmm. whoever's commandeering the vessel would...
I have never heard anything distinguished between the actual closure when you're not permitted to cross the bar and simply a warning that mm-hmm. it could be hazardous.
Yeah, Jeremiah's right. They do, just like a hazardous bar warning, they announce that on the radio on 16 every, half hour or whatever.
Every half hour.
Yeah.
Right.
They would do the same on a closure.
Yeah. And secondly... What was my second one? Oh, in view of the fact that there may be other government closures wasn't there some website where people could make contributions to our Coast Guard station here to help them out?
The organization that kind of shepherded or took and distributed the donations was the Chief Petty Officers Association. It's a just what it says. It's an association of chief petty officers within the Coast Guard, and there's local chapters, and they're the ones that handled the collection and distribution of it.
So if it happens again, they can go to the Coast Guard website and find the chief petty
officers? Yes, and we also directed them. The city council and others were directing them to come to the Harbor Department as well as a sort of a clearinghouse spot for them as well.
I'd like to just make a comment on that. I don't know if the website would be the place to go to, and the only reason I say that is when I had a discussion with our current senior chief, and if it goes into the general fund, then it can be dispersed anywhere in the country. So personally, I'd recommend engaging our Coast Guard. They're very nice guys, happy to open the door and say
do
hello
it directly.
And do it direct to ensure that it stays in our
community. Yeah. I'd just like people to know that there is that if they want to help them out and this occurs again. Thank you.
And back to your first point, Lori, just reminded me you can go on the city's Notify Me section, where you sign up for notices to meetings and other things. There's a marine advisory section in there that the Coast Guard puts daily updates on weather and entrance conditions on there. So you can subscribe to that and then get notification about it.
Morning
and
night.
Yeah,
a day. You need to repeat that because that's a powerful resource and let people know if you sign up for Notify Me, there's nothing you have to do after that.
Correct.
The city does send out all their notifications to you if you're subscribed to that service.
Yeah, you just need to sign up and put your email in there and probably a password so you can change your settings and whatnot, but a basic sign up and you'll get all the notifications out of whatever you sign up for, and you can sign up for agendas or whatever else. And so, yes, the Coast Guard puts on there twice a day what the weather conditions are, which would include hazardous bar and other things.
Jeremiah, anything else from you? Gene? You sure? You had some?
I wanted to give a shout-out of appreciation to Jeremiah, Becca, and Scott for their heroic efforts in pulling that boat off of the rocks there. From what I understand, it was quite a chore. So those are good guys, and we're really lucky to have all of them, all three of them.
That was not this Jeremiah.
No.
That was a really super, as all of our Harbor Patrol men are, Harbor Patrol named Jeremiah Jacobson. He's a super guy. They're all, we're fortunate. But I just wanted to make it clear that I wasn't out there scrambling around the rocks.
And I have one question before you move on to the status matrix.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give us some status detail on how the Triangle Lot storage is being promoted specifically, and what sort of given that the clearinghouse for that is as determined by the city, the Harbor Office, how well it's going? And I forget how many slots, Dana, you. And Eric worked out 50.
Well, it changed. Paper to what?
How many slots are there?
Probably closer to 30.
Okay.
Once we laid it out and you start, we ended up putting our boat on a trailer, or maybe just a trailer, but I think we put our big boat on the trailer and just started dragging things around to logistically see what you could do, and it ended up you needed more space than we could put on paper.
And to be clear, it's not the entire 2.2 acres or 3 acres of the Triangle Lot. It's a portion, a significant portion.
It's a portion. It's about half the lot. Mm. The back portion of that half is pretty loose gravel and sand and isn't terribly usable, kind of back where that white Navy trailer used to be. So it's not the best back in there. And we put pilings in, we not knowing what the response was going to be. We had maybe half a dozen folks on sort of a waiting list that were interested. We opted to just put some pilings to delineate the space for now. The fencing cost was just a little north of $15,000, and I made the executive decision not to put that in just yet, and let's see how it goes, because that was a pretty big commitment. If we don't get a lot of usage, it would be a lot of fencing, a lot of expenditure for naught. I think that's working against us a little bit in that some people think or would want to have more of a secure storage rather than unsecured storage, so we'll have to weigh that as time goes on. To answer your question about advertising, we've put out a fair amount of flyers. I think we put it on the city's website at some point. We've got it on Craigslist. It's on our bulletin board. It's about as far and wide as we've gone at this point.
How often is it refreshed on Craigslist?
Don't have an answer for that. We just got it up and going in either mid-December or early January.
Because if you don't refresh weekly, then it disappears from Craigslist.
Yeah, just goes down the list.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and the current status of customers of your 30-some spots?
I think we've got five in there. And then the south end has got a fair amount of construction materials for the Morro Bay Landing project. There was a giant, and there may still be, a big pile of gravel and dirt for the paving project that's been going on all through town. That all got staged in there, along with a lot of the equipment got staged in there. So, and then the Maritime Museum's got a couple of containers, and that's all in their permitting for their project for doing the Maritime Museum. So, yeah, there's a lot of use in there. Absolutely.
Those containers are within the Maritime Museum's footprint as granted by the city, question mark?
I believe so, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're using it for more than just parking, absolutely. I mean, is there times when
crab pots?
Yeah, I mean, that's that season now. It's a little early for folks to be wrapping that up because that doesn't end till June, but a lot of crab pots get staged at the beginning and the end of the season in there, and so it gets a lot of use. Are there days when it gets used a lot for vehicle parking? Yeah, some, not a lot. It's still, even though it's got a sign going into it, it's just not intuitive to go park there. It's not inviting to go park there. There's no entrance off the street, so it doesn't get a lot of usage just because it's got kind of a funky way of getting into it, and people don't see it as a parking lot. So I think that's probably its biggest impediment. And there's parking elsewhere, and folks don't necessarily feel a need to go into there and find a spot.
I would just like to say that the use may seem mixed right now, and obviously having the paving company there and some different things, but I think it's appropriate for next door, across the street from a Measure D area. That is the priority of that whole set of that section of waterfront, so I think that needs to be reminded to people.
Not to create a problem with the interested parties, but you mean Measure D as defined not to include necessarily grandfathered restaurant activities? Or am I putting words in your mouth?
You're saying the other end of it, but what I'm saying is what it is for. It's fishing, and which is a boating activity, so what you have across the street, and you have the Maritime Museum's been there for a while, and if fishermen are storing gear there and you have boat storage, the only place you can have boat storage where you can take your boat down without any power lines down to the launch ramp, and it's not competing with any other business as far as boat storage.
Eric, setting aside the designated area for the Maritime Museum and setting aside the area for the 30-some dry storage boat slots, how many cars could get in there, could park in there, and the rest of it? Give or take.
This is a
10, 20, 30.
Not a wild guess, an estimated guess. If people went in there and either parked in an organized, orderly fashion, or it was marked as such, with delineated as such to make people park in an orderly fashion, I would imagine you'd be able to get at least 50.
So one way,
maybe more?
One way, and this is hypothetical, one way to address Mr. League's concern about the headboat parking would be to have that operator, to have the city instruct that operator to have their people park in that lot, in a designated portion of that lot.
Okay, so noted.
Yeah, well, I understand that you're not the decision maker, and but I'm making a general comment, and with any luck, the city manager, yeah, the city manager might be listening tonight, so. So he'd be prepared for Mr. League.
There's plenty of parking. There's a car show there every Saturday morning.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Beat that one up enough?
Go.
ice-making machine, which was built probably close to 20 years ago now, maybe 15, mostly with grant funding, a lot of it from the Cable Committee, a lot of it from Coastal Conservancy. Been a great machine, a little bigger than we've needed based on what happened to the fleet over the last 15 years. But a vital component. It's being operated under lease by Santa Monica Seafood. They've done a great job in trying to maintain it, but it's getting old, and the refrigeration system is to the point where it's in need of replacement because it's starting to cost a lot of money and things break down often. And we got last year a $100,000 grant from the Cable Committee to replace the entire refrigeration system on it. Santa Monica's working on that right now. They think they've got parts ordered. Morbid Commercial Fishermen's Organization partnered with us to get that grant from the Cable Committee, so I want to thank the CFO, and hopefully we'll get that machine back up and running sometime in February and get all the refrigeration replaced, and it's going to get rid of the old R22 refrigeration, which is not being made anymore and getting very expensive and going to the modern refrigerants. And so that'll be a good upgrade on that machine once we get that running and hopefully get that machine back up to its specifications for reliability, because right now it's not very reliable.
Eric?
Yep.
Is there a set date to start that project? Have we got that far, or to begin, have they ordered the parts and so forth?
The stuff got ordered, how long? I want to say it was a couple weeks out. Yeah, for parts was a couple weeks out because they had the order from the suppliers. So that should be getting going within a week or two.
It will begin immediately? They're all set to, once they get the...
Well, once they get parts and Race Engineering, the firm doing it, will schedule, but they believe they can get it done in a week once they get going on it. So we're hoping it gets done within the month of February is the plan at this point. We hope, knock on wood. Okay, recent council activity, December 11th, council approved a new long-term lease for the old off-the-hook lease site, 8788, formerly known as off-the-hook, where Under the Sea Gallery is now, for a complete redevelopment project. That project is currently, I believe, at Coastal Commission, moving forward in the planning process, so we'll see where that goes. January 8th, this year, council approved, among other appointments, Ron announced earlier, Councilwoman McPherson is this year's Harbor Advisory Board liaison. And amongst all the other liaison and discretionary appointments took place as well. Also on the 8th, the new master lease agreement, long-term lease agreement for lease site 9696W, which is where House of Juju currently is, with Flying Dutchman Enterprises, not to be confused with the Dutchman restaurant, same brothers, but different enterprise. For completion of a site redevelopment that's taken place there over probably about the last 7 or 8 years. That one's getting completed. The back deck's getting finished up to be fully public accessed. a better connection to the sidewalk next to it at Anchor Memorial Park, and then a redesign inside on the interior of the building that faces the ocean that's now basically storage and not used for the public, and that's going to be open up to the public, so we'll be adding some additional seating, so that'll be nice when that comes along. He'll probably start on that next fall of 2019, so we'll see that coming a little bit later this year. Also on the 8th, the council approved a deed of trust, basically a loan for Harbor Hut lease site, 122-123, for a loan to complete all the water infrastructure they're doing. They're connecting up, as you know, Morbay Landing did their phase one of the docks, which was all the docks out in front of the construction that's happening now. And then they went and did the docks over on the other side of Harbor Hut in front of the parking lot. Well, now Harbor Hut's doing their part in between, which is a long dock in between and a couple finger slips. And that will complete all the dock work there, and that's underway right now as well. And also on the 8th, the council adopted its 2019 council meeting calendar for goals, objectives, and work plan and budget development, and that's included with the staff report as an attachment. So you can see the council calendar and the whole budget calendar. I believe when I brought you goals back in December, I had 2018's calendar as just sort of a placeholder, but this time we've got the actual real one. So if you want to know what the dates are for goal setting and budgeting, which we'll talk about the budget process and the finance report a little bit later, we can get to that. And the last thing the council did on the 8th was authorize this year's delegation of CMANC to Washington, D.C., which consists of myself, the harbor director, and the mayor. This year is scheduled for the week of March 4th, so we'll be going out there probably on the 3rd, Sunday the 3rd. We've already got a tentative meeting schedule for the 4th, 5th, and 6th, so we'll be going out, assuming Washington, D.C. is open. We'll be able to meet with our legislators if there's another shutdown and it's still going on in March. Unsure what will happen with the non-legislative folks, the departments and other divisions and whatnot, but we'll just see what happens. So tentatively that's set up and ready to go. And on January 24th, as you announced earlier, the council held its advisory body interviews and reappointed Charisse and Dana for another term. Congratulations. And as Councilwoman McPherson mentioned earlier, on Friday, March 1st, is the city's special meeting to do community forum on goals, 4 p.m. here at the Vets Hall. Much like the one we conducted last year, we had a moderator, and all council and department heads were there looking at goals that are still in play and then looking at future goals. We'll have other outreach and input opportunities as and the goal setting as opportunities become available. Council's currently slated for goals. March 1st, goals forum. March 12th, another goals discussion and a potential approval at the City Council. And then March 26th, another goal discussion. Certainly input to that website that was mentioned earlier. And to myself, to the Harbor Advisory Board, if we have any other Harbor Advisory Board goals we want to look at as well. So that's the goal-setting process this year. Not doing like we've done in past years with a bunch of back and forth with advisory bodies and joint meetings with advisory bodies. It's going to be a little more simplified and streamlined process this year. And then Gene mentioned upcoming event, Big Bad and Ugly Surf Contest. And then March 9th. And 10th is Water Rescue Con, which is K38 is the company that does our water rescue training on jet ski or personal watercraft. They've been putting together for several years now rescue symposium. They're calling it Water Rescue Con now, where rescue agencies from really around the world are coming in and just getting involved in training and informational seminars and whatnot. So that'll be happening in March. Any questions on any of those? I believe at the Vets Hall, but I don't think it's nailed down yet. It's where it's been in the past, has been at the Vets Hall. Nope, haven't been. And then down into the matrix that we call it, or the update on our Harbor Advisory Board recommendations.
If you could just comment on the things that have changed.
Number one, State Park Superintendent recently informed me that Sacramento is warming back up to the State Park Marina and trying to figure out what they're going to do back there, so we'll see what comes of that. Number three, we're talking about that boatyard, and we'll skip right past that one, the RFP for financial feasibility. That's an agenda item today. Item four, update of the cost allocation plan. Bet you want to see it, don't you? It's right here. Here's the draft. The consultant has got the draft of the cost allocation out for all the three enterprise funds and the general fund. We're getting our input back to it. They're well underway on the master fee update as well, so that's getting done in time to get factored into the budget setting process, so that's well underway. Item six, eelgrass. We've got an item on that, so I'm not going to get involved in that one right now, but I've got some updating on that to do. And that's all the ones that are out update. That's all I have.
Any last comments or questions for the harbor director on his report? Okay. Seeing none. That takes us to business items, C1. And the first item on C1 is election of Harbor Advisory Board Chair and Vice Chair for the year, for the new year. And for those Harbor Advisory Board members that haven't been through this before, nominations can be made by any HAB member to nominate any other HAB member, and a HAB member can nominate themselves if they so choose. And if any of those nominations are seconded, then the nomination goes on the slate, and we have two positions that we're taking nominations for at this time, in no particular order, the chair and the vice chair. So I'll open nominations for the chair. Jeremiah?
Yeah, I'd like to nominate Ron Reiser for chair.
I'd like to second that nomination.
Okay, any other nominations for the chair? Speak now. Cowards.
You're so good.
Cowards. Okay, well, given that there's no other nominations, we'll close the nominations, and we'll take a vote now. We don't have to do a roll call or anything because there's only one nominee. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? One. Carries. Vice Chair. Nominations are now open for Vice Chair.
I'll nominate Mark.
Okay.
For Vice Chair.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Any other nominations? Are you done? I nominate Lynn. And she declined. Any other nominations?
I'm sorry. Repeat the nomination.
Mr. Blackford.
Oh, okay.
Moved and seconded. Any other nominations for Vice Chair? Seeing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
What abstention?
Wait a second. Opposed? None. Abstentions? One. Abstention. Carries. Okay. So that takes us to, thank you for that, all of that. Thank you. So that takes us to C2. C2 is review of submissions and recommended next step for the Morro Bay Boatyard and Marine Services Facility Financial Feasibility Study Request for Proposal Process. Wow, Eric. And update from the Boatyard Marine Services Facility Ad Hoc Committee. I'd like to start with the committee report, and then we'll talk about the first part of the subject line. Dana?
The committee has nothing to report except for what the staff has to report on.
Okay. Any questions for the committee from the board? None? Okay. Mr. Director, the review of et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Thank you. So as we know, we issued a request for proposals for financial feasibility study services. back in October with a February 1st due date. As of reporting of the staff report and posting, we didn't have February 1st to us yet, so we didn't have the results of whether or not we received anything. Unfortunately, I'm have to report we did not receive any proposals. We had several firms interested. I actually had a firm contact us from the Midwest, actually compliment us on the packet itself, saying it was a good scope of work and it was very understandable, and they thanked us for that, and they said, but we declined because you probably got some locals there that we wouldn't be able to compete with because we're so far away. So it got some interest. A couple other engineering firms contacted me, Lisa Wise Consulting as well. But unfortunately, we did not see any responses. So as far as next steps, we don't really need to look at numbers one and number two.
Well, hang on a sec before we move on to next steps. Having had some feedback from the marketplace, do you have any second thoughts about the RFP, or do you think the RFP was adequately crafted?
Well, I looking back, and where I was leading to is the next step, number three, possibility. Number one and number two, if we receive responses, we would have a decision to make. Who sits on a board to decide and whatnot, and any other recommendations. Since we don't have anything to decide upon, those issues are moot. Number three is, if none are received, what are recommended next steps? In hindsight, and Dana can, I'll let Dana speak to Lisa Wise Consulting because he contacted them. In hindsight, I would probably say two major factors have probably resulted in no responses. One, there's a lot of work right now with consultants and a lot of construction and a lot of activity with companies like this that are doing these kind of things. I know I've talked to Henry at Lisa Wise, and they've got things going all over the place. As do a lot of other consultants that I deal with in my job with other aspects of harbor mastering. And so there's a lot of work, and people are picking and choosing, and they can pick what they want to pick, and they're not hungry and not having to grab anything they can grab. I think that's the first factor working against. It's like the second factor, again, in hindsight, was the packet itself. We crafted it as in a phased approach and looking at, and I think it was maybe to try and save on costs and not spend any more money than we had to, where we looked at it and we said, okay, let's look at these certain first factors, and if it looks like these factors would kill any possibility of a boatyard being financially feasible, don't look at anything else because we're done. And I think consultants probably looked at that and realized, well, what happens if we get to that point and we do all this work to get through phase one and it's, you know, only a small portion of an overall contract to do the whole thing in comparison, why bother with that little small part? I think that worked against us in hindsight. That's my input. Dana, I don't know if you got anything more. You spoke directly to Henry, so.
Pretty much what you said. They're busy, and I know when you're busy, you look at what's the easiest. And I think that phased approach might be a little bit of a complication. You're looking at things, okay, what is it going to take? How long is it going to take us to do this job? Here it is. It's this much time. Oh, well, but it might only be this much, or it might only be this much. So that may not be their first choice as far as something they want to put a proposal for. I think being at the end of the year like it was, I think we should just throw it back out there. Whether we want to make some modifications, that is up for discussion, I think.
And so I spoke to the Public Works Director, Rob Leivick, and asked him, because I've done a number of RFPs, but not nearly as many and as robust as they have, especially in the last few years with the wharf project going on. And I asked him, what do you do when you don't get any responses? He says, extend the deadline. If you want to keep doing it, if you want to try again, extend the deadline. Contact those that you knew expressed interest or those that you think could still be interested and basically ask them to reapply or find out what their impediments were or what their issues might have been and recraft the RFP to take that sort of thing into account if you think it's worth doing.
And actually, it might be good to go ahead and contact the parties that we do know of that that spoke to with you, and before we send it out, because if there is some modification that we think would be more inviting.
Yeah, that would be the order. Obviously, if you, yeah. you've got input okay. from prospective respondents, you'd want to know what their input is before you go change the document. So up for discussion tonight is really, what are our next steps, and do we want to continue on and try to modify this RFP and get it back out there in hopes that somebody will apply? If it's really a money thing, we could potentially ask a consultant or consultants for a budgeting estimate, what they think something like that might cost. When LWC asked how much we had allocated to it, of course it's a public record because we did it in a public meeting, kind of would seem counterintuitive to give them that kind of information. You'd think, oh great, now they're just going to bid right up to the max, even if it costs less. But it's public information, so I told them what was approved by the council, but I also said we went to the council and said, here's what's in our budget. We believe it will fit within this amount of budget, but if not, we will come back. If we do get responses back and it's above what's budgeted, we will come back to council and potentially seek additional funding. So I didn't say to LWC, here's what it is and that's all it can ever be. I said, you know, the door may still be open if it ends up coming up more than that. So obviously it wasn't just a cost thing that was the factor for them. I think it was the other factors as well.
How many firms expressed an interest?
I want to say there, including LWC, there were four or five.
How many of them are regional?
What's regional? This county?
West Coast.
West Coast? I believe I had three. Might have been four. One was definitely Midwest. I can't remember the state, but it was a ways off.
Okay, discussion. Gene, thoughts?
I like the idea of contacting the interest parties and see whether there's some kind of modification, as Dana and Eric suggested. And then if there's something we can do easily, send it back out.
Jeremiah?
Yeah, I'd say the same. I already agree with Gene. I think looking through the original proposal, just not being familiar with the business, is there some simple stumbling block that could be amended and then put it back out for a relook?
Lynn?
When I first read that there had been no responses, it was like, we've been trying to do this for 20 years and we're still getting no responses to the request for proposals. And I thought, we're going nowhere, we should probably give up. But knowing that four or five of them had at least expressed an interest, then I am much more positive toward going out, sending it out again with revisions that might make it more palatable to some of those firms.
Mark.
It's clear that we are not capturing all the potential clientele. Is there a way that we can be more proactive in getting this to particular engineering firms that handle this type of business? More like targeted marketing?
If we do this again, I think that would be imperative that we, like Lisa Wise and you know, I sent it directly to because I knew they were potentially interested and we knew they do that. I think if we do a redo, I think it's imperative that we make sure we push it into people's hands that we know are interested, or not interested, but potentially could do it. Just like you say, sort of targeted marketing, yeah.
Dana.
Yeah, I mean, this is for a feasibility study, economic feasibility. So one interest, Eric got a hold of Bruce Marshall, who originally did one for us, and he said his firm was not interested in doing it, but he was interested in running the yard if we ever got it together. So, I mean, I agree with what Mark was saying. Somehow we have to find the market more. I don't know how. It's. I think you've been working on it and doing a pretty good job. You've gotten interest, but I don't know how far you have to go. Ron, you're in this industry, and I assume you would know how to market this RFP.
It, as has already been talked about, it requires identifying the firms that are qualified to do it without regard to their interest, their potential interest, that are qualified to do it and are located geographically in a way that would make practical sense for them, and then soliciting those firms. Charisse?
Nothing more to add.
Okay. Eric, how long would it take whomever your office and Dana have been working on this one in particular, how long would it take to recontact the firms that have expressed an interest and to have that discussion with them that is there anything about the RFP that we could do to make it more interesting to you? However, you don't want to lead them, but however we ask that question. That's question number one. And question number two is, how long would it take and who could work on identifying qualified firms for economic feasibility? Gene?
Just a thought. I mean, I'm sure we probably went through this once before, but how about contacting major boatyards and see who they would recommend? You know, instead of just doing the feasibility study, then the boatyard, maybe we talk to boatyard people and say, hey, who do you recommend to give us a feasibility study, whether it'll work or not? There must be all kinds of boatyards up in Frisco, you know, and Drisco or something like that. So.
Yes,
I'm sure we probably looked at it one time before also, but just an idea.
That's a good idea. It's more phone time, which is not, you know.
Yeah, and that's a great idea. I mean, I Paul Kaplan from KKMI contacted me. I'm not sure quite why he contacted me. I don't know if he knew about it or heard about it or somebody in the business told him, but he contacted me, and he's actually the one that got me on the jag of doing it in a phased approach, because he says, you know, there's some things that just kill this thing right off the bat you need to look at, and here they are. They were in the process of or finishing up a new boatyard in Sausalito, I want to say. They opened up another yard, and so that's a pretty big company, very high profile. I would imagine they...
Okay, and the answer to my questions are?
The answer to your question, how long it would take?
To
contact?
There were two questions. To recontact those that have already, and to have a conversation with them to the extent that they're willing to do it, and B, to organize, identify who will do it, and then look for additional parties, whatever that plan might be.
I think those are all one action, contacting, seeing how interested they are, finding out what their input is, identify other firms at the same time and ask them even the same questions. I don't think it's a long process, a couple of weeks to get input back and forth to folks, make phone calls or emails or both.
And what do you think should happen, and what does the board think should happen once all that information is in our hands? Then what?
I think we need to digest it and see, just depending on what the responses are, and if the responses are, oh, yeah, something like that's going to cost you $78,000 or something, you know, if it's along those lines, we've got a decision to make, whether we want to try and push that forward or whether we just realize, you know, this is out of our hands or whatever. It just depends on what the responses are. I think changing the RFP is from input that we get is the good approach. It just depends on what that input is and whether it's a viable path forward or not.
So my suggestion for the consideration of you and for the board is that if the harbor department and whomever is willing to help them gets through that process, has collected the information, that the harbor department and representative or representatives of the Harbor Advisory Board and our council liaison sit down and review the results and formulate a, quote, next step, unquote, whatever that might be.
No, I think that's how we have to do it. And just, it, like I say, it's going to depend on what we get for feedback. Mm-hmm. And that feedback will inform us what direction we need to go.
Ms. McPherson, are you willing to participate in that? She is in the affirmative. Okay, anything else on this item?
Nope.
Okay.
Other than I'll appreciate and take all the help I can get from the committee and the Boatyard Ad Hoc Committee and helping identify said firms and making that outreach.
Yeah, I think, ask for help.
Help.
Yeah, a little more organized fashion than that. C3, update from the Finance and Budget Ad Hoc Committee on the committee's recent activities. Mark?
Okay. So we're discussing goal number one. Our objective is to evaluate the opportunities for new or expanded revenue sources. As the HAB is aware that we are the necessary funding for required repair, capital improvement and capital replacement projects is not currently available through our current income streams. We've been made aware that city and other fees, including TOT, sales tax revenues, possessory interest revenues, would not necessarily be available from the general fund to augment our capital requirements. It still remains a question whether any parking meter revenue would accrue to the Harbor District. And addressing item 8 on the matrix, our last update on that was 4/27 of 18. And is it possible to get maybe the city attorney to give us their opinion as to...
That's not the city attorney. It's the city manager starts with that.
Okay, the city manager to give us
an
opinion.
Don't get the city attorney involved at this point. Please.
Is it possible to get the city manager?
Ask the harbor director.
Is it possible to get is it possible to get the city manager to give us their opinion as to if there was parking meters on the Embarcadero, who that revenue would go to? As a point of discussion so that we may adequately assess whether that satisfies any of our capital requirements.
Before the harbor director answers, which he's more than capable of doing, I will share with you that 2 months ago, in a discussion I had with the city manager about the topic of parking on or around the area of the Embarcadero, he told me at that time that that's something that was going to be considered by council in 2019. That's all I have.
To answer your question, I think at this point, it's a little premature to try and telegraph where that might be. I mean, obviously, west side of the road, harbor, east side of the road, not harbor, but I would make the argument that there's patrons on both sides that would be patronizing both sides of the line if you want to start drawing lines. But it's going to take the council taking this up and staff doing the research to vetted, and as you know, as a Harbor Advisory Board, we looked at, I don't know, 8 or 10 or 12 recommendations that the city should consider if dealing with paid parking. It was going to establish paid parking. And I think distribution of revenues was one of the items we had on that list. So it would be part of that whole process if we start moving forward with it. It's potential revenue source, I think, trying to figure out now, is it worth us for us to pursue that if we only get, you know, a certain amount of revenue spaces? I think it's way early to even be thinking about that. I think it's a bigger picture question is establishing it overall and how you divvy up the revenues and doing estimates and whatnot from there.
So in a budgetary sense, we should look at this for satisfying anything for 3+ years.
I don't think it's 3+ years. I mean, if it got into the council goals or somehow became a directive from the council or from the city manager to establish and we pushed it to the council, and I could see it potentially happening within a year, you know, going through the public process, there's going to be, I'm sure, public hearings. It takes Coastal Commission approval to establish paid parking. So it's probably a year-long process. Just depends on how much emphasis and importance is put on it and how robust the public process is to take all that input and move it forward.
Thank you. Now we're looking at two things. One is enhancement and the other is new revenue sources. Under enhancement, one of the key goals that we have and we have a committee working towards is the improvement of revenue from the commercial lease sites. In subtext to that, we've got two things that we're working towards. One is established improved audit processes to assure rental income is paid per existing leases. And then second is establish a lease parameters that enhance revenue in the future. Of course, item B is a item that would be of slow growth and wouldn't be anything that we would receive income in the short term other than leases that are currently under negotiation. So it's one of those things that is imperative for a long-term health but doesn't solve our 400,000 approximate shortfall per year in the near term. The other enhancement to the existings we're looking at, as you discussed, was the fee structure analysis, and I look forward to obtaining a copy of that when possible. And looking at the parameters that that they are establishing and looking at use fees for our commercial use of the harbor, particularly in slip fees. Under new, we have items utilization of the currently unused assets for revenue generation, whether it be concession licenses or primitive camping. We're going to try and flesh that out more for the board's review and perusal as far as what we're looking at as a thought process. Then also we have want to take a look at the budget process and timeline. I believe that you have information for us on that.
In the status report was the budget timeline.
And how and when can the HAB be of assistance to you?
Let me pull out that attachment. We're warming up to mid-year right now. Towards the end of this month, February 28th, Finance Department generates all their personnel and all the other fixed costs that they're able to forecast out, and they provide those to us, along with a draft budget outline, and then us department heads start working into it through the month of March. Budgets are due to Finance March 26th, our first round of the budget. March 26th, April 1st through 5th, we have budget team meetings. That's staff meetings to start hammering out where the priorities and how the budgeting is going to work. April 8th to 12th, city manager, department head budget meetings. April 15th and 19th, the city manager and the finance department is going to start finalizing budgets, and then April 23rd, the first round of budgets go to the city council. And then into May is budget study sessions that are public sessions to take input. Goals is obviously going to factor into this and where the goal establishments are, because if we want goals that cost money, we've got to factor that into the budget. And then the budget usually gets adopted either the first meeting in June or the second meeting in June. So that's the general calendar. So any time between now and really March, any February is a good time for the HAB budget committee to provide input and help me with the process to start developing things, and then, like I say, they're due to finance by March 26th, but I'd like to get stuff sometime in February, early March.
Do you think it would be useful to you if the Finance and Budget Ad Hoc Committee helped you take a look at the assumptions relative to infrastructure, useful life, infrastructure at this stage, which would be a year later now, budget, potential budget costs for A, maintenance, B, repair, C, improvement?
Yes.
Would that be of use to you?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So that means that the committee, the ad hoc committee chair and the Harvard director need to schedule at mutual convenience.
Also, as a standing item, I'd like to see if we have any other ideas or concepts for additional or enhanced revenue that we can meet our shortfalls from the HAB. Any
fresh thoughts? Charisse? Fresh thoughts? Dana, fresh thoughts?
Well, I'm just thinking when the tall ships come in, we make money. And when we had the San Salvador here, we made money across the waterfront. So I don't know if we could have a schooner fest or something.
Schooner fest. That's a cool idea. Lynn, any fresh thoughts?
Only stale ones.
Only stale ones. Jeremiah, fresh?
Not at this minute.
Gene, fresh?
Oh, I'm just curious about the Trident Wind Farm here. That could be a good revenue source. So,
during our December 6th meeting, we identified a number and discussed a number of potential revenue production items, and one of those was the City and Castle Wind Agreement. The harbor getting, and just to remind ourselves and the watching public, the city has, by our mutual estimation, significantly in excess of $2 million in unfunded liability for infrastructure, for harbor infrastructure, maintenance, repair, and improvement. That's the challenge. It's a really expensive place on the waterfront in terms of the physical assets are concerned. And that's what's bothering us. It's been bothering us for a long time. And the money is going to have to be generated in ways other than the city's general fund. That's pretty clear. I mean, that's not a criticism or a complaint. It's a simple statement of fact. So one of the things that we identified in December was the harbor budget getting some portion of a hypothetical agreement between the city and Castle Wind. And we haven't heard back from the city manager on that question. We already know that we're getting minor portion of whatever revenue is produced out of the triangle lot storage once the direct expenses have been taken care of. So not getting much out of that. Insofar as the South T Pier is concerned, there was consensus among the board that the amount that is currently going into a loan payment for the South T Pier, that after the loan has been paid off, and I'm sorry, Eric, I can't remember the exact date that that happens, that amount of money continue to be set aside in the budget instead of for loan service for infrastructure. Can you refresh us as to when that expires?
I believe, give or take, including this year, we're down to either 4 or 5 years left in that loan. It's $134,000.
Yeah, so that's another long-term,
getting closer,
long-term item. In December, as far as primitive camping was concerned, there was not board consensus to pursue that at that time. Doesn't mean that it's, we don't ever talk about it again. There was board consensus relative to participation in paid parking, and we've talked about that already. I reported to the board in December a meeting I had with the city manager about the harbor getting a share of the TOT, T-bid, sales tax, and possessory interest tax that's collected off of Titleist Trust commercial lease property. And I haven't heard back about that. So that's just a review. There's no new ideas. That's just a review of where we are. So the point being that as of this moment, we haven't identified anything that's going to chip away in any significant way at a $2+ million unfunded liability. Gene?
Yeah. I don't think we're going to solve our problems by nickel and diming and you know, squeezing every penny out of every little local person on the area. I think we have to look at bigger pictures, and I'm looking at the power plant property. Now, that is zoned utility, something like that. But if they no longer do that, that zoning is going to change or can change. And that's a place that we can get some money from. I don't know how. But that's a big piece of property on the water. We should be getting some kind of fee out of that one somewhere, and that's going to be a big number. So that's the only biggest piece of property we got on the Embarcadero that's still unanswered.
And another potentially big number is the concept that we've been talking about. Bill LaFay brought this up almost 2 years ago now, the concept of a harbor district. Yeah, that's the fourth time you've reminded me of that. I'm just not willing to, you know, don't take it personally, Dana.
No, that's all right.
I apologize.
Sometimes, you know, that's fine if somebody else takes that.
No.
Depends on how it turns out.
Oh, I mean, I see. Oh, okay.
Something like that is, I mean, you have to have a referendum, you know, vote, and, you know, it could get ugly. But
well, even before that, it would take the will of city leadership, the elected officials, to be willing to pursue that, because they would have to get behind it, and they'd have to push it with the county and so on. But a lot of folks come here and a lot of folks use it, and so far, the city of Morro Bay is paying the bill.
Well, it works in Santa Cruz, and the Port District and the city get along really well. I asked the ex-assistant city manager about that, and he said they work really well together. So, I mean, it's a possibility. It's just when I look at Port San Luis, it's like, how can that boatyard be there? How can that exist? It can only haul and launch maybe a third of the year with weather and swell, and it exists because it has that tax base. A little tiny piece of property tax from everybody from San Luis South pays for that to exist. So if we had something like that here, where a portion of our county paid a little tiny part, they use it, they come in here, So it's a possibility.
Is, excuse my ignorance, Ron, but is Harvard District, does that mean that we would be able to share in a tax base outside of Morro Bay, like Dennis?
Yeah, the concept is those that use pay, and as Dana pointed out, if the catchment group is large enough, the individual pay is very small.
Yeah, if you went to from a county to a state district, then it would be even bigger. But that's just that much huger and harder to participate in. Why would people want to do that?
Yeah, in my experience with Harbor districts has not been. I don't think Harbor districts and the commercial fishing industry have always seemed to work well together. That's my experience with Harbor districts.
Well, the basic concept in this particular case doesn't mean it's viable. The basic concept is that when we're talking about users, we're talking about citizenry. We're not talking about the businesses, and we're not talking about slip holders or that. We're talking about folks that come to the area, including local citizens who go to the waterfront and use and enjoy the waterfront. It's that group, that population that we're talking about.
I see. I was pretty much talking about the management of the district, of the Harbor District.
Well, okay. We need to agendize this if we're going to continue to discuss it, which I'm perfectly willing to do. If somebody wants to declare it, I think it already is, actually. It's already declared. So I'm happy to agendize it, and then we can talk about it ad nauseum. So, okay. Anything else, Mark?
Not at this time. Just keep looking for new and fresh ideas to generate revenue in the short term.
Yeah, we didn't do very well with that tonight. Okay, C4, update from the Eelgrass Ad Hoc Committee on the committee's recent activities, including new developments and possible eelgrass in lieu mitigation fee programs. And just as a quick review, the Harbor Advisory Board was tasked by the City Council, for whom it serves, to develop a proposed eelgrass mitigation plan. As it relates to, I use the word advisedly, development on the waterfront. Lynn?
Yeah, we had a meeting to follow up with the plan that was presented to this body June, July, when QEA brought up.
Yeah, last summer, last fall.
Last sometime. And at that time, Anchor QEA was suggesting that we do compensatory mitigation, and that the plan could then be included or could use the NEP, Morro Bay National Estuary Program, as the vehicle for doing mitigation plans with the proponents or those who had developmental projects on the waterfront that were going to impact eelgrass. They would pay NEP, and NEP would use the funds to mitigate or to develop new areas of eelgrass, to make it grow someplace, and that would mitigate for whatever harm was done by the project that was going on. As it turned out, the NEP Board of Directors didn't really go for that way of working because they did not like, or they were not comfortable with having to do long-term long-term evaluation of the projects, because the way they work their projects, it would have been difficult for them to set aside particular areas of that and say that this area that we have done some eelgrass mitigation belongs to a particular proponent, because the particular proponent has to mitigate for whatever impact he does on at least a 1-to-1. It's actually 1.2-to-1 basis. So it complicated the way NEP worked with their eelgrass planting and their eelgrass protection plan. So we had another meeting with Anchor QEA, with the rest of the committee and Eric, and it seems that an in-lieu program, which is slightly different from the mitigation bank, the in-lieu program may work better with NEP. The difference between these two, and this is as I understand it, and Eric, if I get this confused, please step in. Mitigation bank, there would be somebody who would do mitigation. They would plant eelgrass in a particular area. The eelgrass would grow. A proponent who is going to impact or perhaps destroy some eelgrass could buy from the mitigation bank a credit, and that would count for their mitigation. The in-lieu program works slightly differently, where the proponent who is going to impact the eelgrass pays to the program first, and then the program, in this case the NEP, actually does the work. The long-term evaluation on these still would remain with the proponent and would not transfer to the mitigation, would not transfer to the NEP, so they would not have that responsibility. So at this point, that idea, we worked on that idea at the meeting. The NEP, Lexi, was there, and she was going to take that to her board of directors, which met yesterday. So we don't really have an answer yet from the board of directors if this way of working the program is more palatable to the NEP, and we'll have to wait for another. Eric.
I do have an answer from the NEP, because Lexi gave it to me today. So I'm going to expand a little bit. So what Lynn said, essentially correct, it's complicated and convoluted, but I'll try and get through it as simply as possible. So the reason that Anchor QEA didn't first recommend an in-lieu program, which is,
because of cost,
as we know, because we went to try and do something different with the project that they proposed, was because of the expense and complication of establishing an in-lieu program. They thought that from their experience and from what they've seen, it costs somewhere between $200,000 and $300,000 to set up such a program. And that's why they didn't recommend that last year, or even year before, when we started down this path. What's made something potentially different now is that a typical in-lieu program is, like Lynn says, you're not doing direct mitigation for eelgrass impacts with eelgrass mitigation. You're doing something in lieu, meaning something in place of it that still has a positive benefit to the environment or the ecosystem. And that's by way of a complicated program that is set up over probably a number of years, and that's why it's so expensive. You got to get everybody on board and get all their input. And it may be that, you know, it's some uplands wetland restoration, or it's some riparian, you know, project up in a farmland or something that eventually can be shown to have a nexus to eelgrass. So, but that kind of program takes a sponsor and management and is pretty complicated. What potentially changed was Kathy Novak through one of her projects she has on the waterfront. If you're impacting less than 10 square meters of eelgrass, you can do in-lieu mitigation. And she had a project that had that kind of impact. And the regulators, and the two that are the main ones involved, are National Marine Fisheries Service, NIMS, and the Corps of Engineers. And they both bought off on a process by which, rather than going and doing some sort of defined project to benefit the resource, those regulators agreed with a program more like what happens when the Regional Water Board fines, say, CMC $17 million for doing a big sewage spill. They fine them $17 million. That money is made available to agencies that can take it and do good with it, and it's not for any particular project or program necessarily. It's just made available. It's more of a donation-based program. Corps of Engineers and NIMS agreed on this project of Kathy's to direct the funding, and a number is identified. I don't know how it's established, but it's through some sort of formulaic method where they take, let's say, $20,000 of mitigation funding and direct it to an organization like the NEP, and the NEP can use it to just do the normal projects and things they always do. And so it doesn't tie them necessarily to a project specifically. So that's what's changed. It would still be an in-lieu program, but it wouldn't be project specific that would put the NEP on the hook for doing something specific to eelgrass mitigation before their normal kind of stuff. So if that made any sense at all, in our meeting we had with the NEP and Anchor QEA a couple of weeks ago, Anchor agreed to update the what we call the matrix, or the sort of the plan summary in the back of our original eelgrass mitigation plan to morph it to this sort of new development. And the NEP, Lexi took that to her board, and the NEP looked at it, and I'll probably just read directly from Lexi's email that she gave me today. And she said, the NEP, the board supports continuing participation in the process to explore the feasibility of an in-lieu fee program sponsored by the City of Morro Bay. Reconcurred that the estuary program is not willing to take on any legal or other obligation to produce mitigation results based on some ratio of growth or other performance standards. In other words, they don't want to be responsible for regular eelgrass or other mitigation. They want to do non-specific things that don't tie their hands or make them legally responsible. And they agreed that the SEP, which is the SEP, that's the model that I spoke of with the Regional Water Board, that model of involvement works well for the estuary program, where the program is paid a specific amount of work to do a specific project that they report on the results on, but they're not obligated to produce some certain amount of growth or other environmental outcome. And she said, it seems to me that Jack's reworking of the table, which is the one that I spoke of in the back of our plan that he revised, Jack's reworking of the table from the report aligns with this thinking. The estuary program can address monitoring for projects over time if funding is available from the in-lieu program. And she said a lot hinges on what would have to be an MOU between the city and the estuary program to ensure that both parties are satisfied with legal ramifications and reporting and who's ultimately responsible for things. And then she went on and finished. The program, the estuary program, the board's sensitive to the estuary program not being seen as a regulatory authority, because they've always taken great pains to ensure that they're not a regulatory authority and that they're not viewed as that, and so they want to make sure that continues, and they don't want to be confused with a regulatory role. Rather, this is more of an in-lieu mitigation role. So that's her input. Like I say, Jack from Anchor revised the matrix and basically says, the city implements an in-lieu fee program, coordinates with applicants and agencies and the NEP. The NEP worked directly with the city to develop and implement compensation projects using funds from the program. So, again, the city would be sort of the keeper of the program, collect funds from various projects, either use those funds as they're collected or keep them until a project identifies itself or enough funds are collected to where maybe it can do some good. And then we, the city, would direct it to an in-lieu program, which the NEP, we'd be working with the NEP to identify such programs. And it may be their normal eelgrass mitigation. It may be some other upland riparian thing they do, but it doesn't tie them to a specific project that's tied to the development.
We got it. So is it still the case that this modified concept would have to be accepted by any number of regulatory agencies?
Yes.
Okay, so from the 30,000-foot level, as we said in the introduction to this agenda item, the City Council tasked the Harbor Advisory Board with developing a potential eelgrass mitigation plan that would facilitate plan development along the waterfront. So is it your opinion, Lynn, and is it your opinion, Eric, that the direction, this current direction, might satisfy that directive?
Yes.
I think we're on a similar trajectory that we were with the original plan, and our next step, bring it to the regulators in concept and see if it's something they'll even buy into. And if they will, then, especially with the potential price tag on it, then we really got to decide if we want to try and move forward with it. And we talked about it at the NEP meeting, you know, potential grants and other things. Obviously, that's a big ticket.
So how are we doing with the budget, the consultant's budget to continue to develop this proposed concept? Are we okay?
I have no budget with my consultant at this time.
So he's working for free?
He updated our matrix, yes, basically for free. It didn't take a lot of time and effort for him. So that was to try and help us along with the process. If we're to go to the regulatory agencies and use him to help us out in that process, that's going to be a budgeted item.
And when might that occur?
I need to get an estimate from them what that might cost to do that. It wouldn't be different from what we had before, which is a few thousand dollars, I think, at most. It wasn't a big ticket item. Potentially it could fit in our budget right now, existing budget.
Questions, comments? Gene?
I'm a bit confused. When Kathy Novak went with her little projects, they were less than 10 square meters. They were able to come up with some money. Army Corps took that money and it spread it around somewhere, and they were able to continue on. So I don't know where the $250,000 to $300,000 process comes in.
To develop an in-lieu mitigation plan. Jack sent me an example from Sacramento District, California in-lieu fee programs. Basically, all the mountain area of California is put under an in-lieu fee program that was developed over a number of years that identifies how the process works, and the $250,000 to $300,000 or $200,000 to $300,000 is what it would take for basically a consultant, an anchor QEA type company, to develop such a plan and get it through the regulatory process and approved. It's a multi-year, he told me, 2 to 3 years at least to develop that kind of a project or that kind of a program. And it costs so much money because you've got almost a dozen regulatory agencies involved, and it's a lot of meetings and a lot of back and forth and a lot of developing policy and programs and getting approvals, and it's just a lot of people's time to develop.
I guess I'll have to talk to Kathy because she didn't spend anywhere near that, and she got two projects through. So I'm just curious what's going on.
Yeah, as a one-off kind of. This is if we want to develop a larger, you know, for the entirety of Morro Bay to cover all projects so that it isn't a one-off and try and go to the regulators and beg, borrow, and steal each time and do something.
Any other questions, comments? Mark?
Would this in-lieu program also cover areas of Los Osos and other county areas as well?
We talked about that in the NEP meeting that we had with Anchor a couple of weeks ago. And looking into the possibility of that. Potentially, yes. If there are some impacts in the Back Bay, it could be something that they could avail themselves to that program. don't know of any planned development
looking
back there.
Looking for participation, is that where you're headed?
Is it possible that the county may pick up a portion of that those costs?
Well, that's what the discussion was about. I don't know of any projects in the Back Bay that the county or others are considering at this time, but...
Anything else on the board on this agenda item? So just in quick summary, thank you for all of that. It's an update. Specifically, what's next? What action is next?
We have the report. We have the response from NEP, so we talked to Anchor QEA about getting the how much it's going to cost to do the next step. The next step would be communicating with the regulatory agencies.
Yeah, I think I want two things from Anchor. One is to pursue that next step, using them to go to the regulatory agencies and see if it's something they'll even consider doing, and two, initial estimates of order of magnitude on if we actually were to develop the bigger plan, what the cost would be, because he said that was an estimate based on other plans they've done, so he needs to look a little closer at Morro Bay, exactly what we're talking about. So it could be more, it could be less, hopefully less. Okay. And probably come back to the HAB in March with where we are and see if the HAB's recommending moving forward. And we may try and identify some potential funding if it is in that $300,000 range. I can tell you right now, well, what's our choice? Do we want to put that towards capital projects? Or
let's take it a step at a time.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So anything else? We're clear? Good. C5, update on the Harbor Department lease management policy update process, including input and direction to the Harbor Advisory Board lease management policy update group members. So we can do this one of two ways. We can start with a report from our HAB members and what they've been doing and their participation, and then let the Harbor Director provide a staff report, or we can do it the other way around. Start with the Harbor Director, and then you folks can talk about what you've been doing. What's your preference? Okay, Charisse, you're on.
Okay, it's just another outline of what is in the agenda. But the Lease Management Policy Update Group is comprised of members reflecting the varied community members from city staff, leaseholders, Harbor Advisory Board members, boaters, slip owners, Chamber of Commerce CEOs representing local businesses, and a member at large recently chosen to be on the TBID board. Together, we have pooled our knowledge to establish an outline, including all relevant content that should be included within the lease policy document. The outline is enclosed in the agenda today. Throughout the process, from the beginning to the end, all of these individuals are doing extensive research, looking at places like Los Angeles, San Diego, Monterey, and we're getting more in every time, and to kind of use all of those different areas and take what pertains to us the best and making sure that we're covering all the bases. Also within the agenda today is our vision statement, is the vision statement that was comprised and put together for us to look at, which sets the stage for future topics and direction of how we want to have the lease update go forward. Recently, we have moved into subgroups to cover more ground individually in smaller areas. So there's a Team A, which handles the general policy, purpose, and benefits. Team B, or Team 2, is covering history, general lease management, and lease scenarios, which is the group that I'm a part of and Mark is a part of. All the members' input is taken into consideration, but not necessarily what the final project is. It's just getting more heads on the agenda. Our result should be a more succinct but all-inclusive, easily comprehensible document that the staff and council agree to set as the updated lease management policy. So, and yeah, that's where we're headed next.
Mark, you want anything to add?
I think Charisse did a wonderful job in that report.
She came well prepared.
Thanks.
Thank you, Charisse. Do you want to add something before I open it up to the board?
I'll just fill in a couple of blanks or give a little more detail. So thank you, Charisse. Great job on the group. Marty Lamelli is doing a wonderful job of trying to keep us herded. We're trying to meet about every other week. Divided up, we decided to, if you look at the outline, you know, conquer one section at a time. We've taken on two sections here. We'll probably keep heading in that direction. I'm not asking the policy group members to write policy. I'm just asking them to get either bullet points or things they want to include or cut and paste from other documents and whatnot and give us input that way, and then we'll write policy, eventually bring it back to the whole group, get the group's input on it, put it together, and then throw it into the file and move on to the next. The policy outline you're looking at in the staff report is not in any particular order at this time, so it's going to change. Not really looking for any Harbor Advisory Board input on this, unless there's something really glaring you really have to get off your chest. You're going to get a chance to look at this thing many times, including the vision statement, and this is really just an update and a reality check and kind of telling you where we are in process. So we seem to have kind of gotten on our feet and hit the ground, and we're moving forward and develop process as we go. We're kind of making it up as we go, but it's starting to form and starting to feel like something's happening now. So that's where we are on the process, and we'll bring it back to the HAB when we think we need to and get input.
Any questions from the board for our working group board members? Gene.
Yeah, at one time there was a leaseholders association. Has that been disbanded, or do you know anything about that? And are they part of this group? And the other question is, under the background, leasing areas, we're just talking about lease sites. Is that correct? Yeah.
Leasing area is basically the three areas that we identified in the working waterfront process, which was in the old lease policy. It's the Measure D area, the main Embarcadero, then the water-only leases. Those are the leasing areas, quote-unquote. What was your first question? Oh, the leaseholders group. I don't know that group is, I don't know that it was ever an official dues-paying
it wasn't.
Be a member group. It was a loosely affiliation of leaseholders that get together when there's an issue to rally around. I've heard there's still members or folks that were involved in the original group that they're still semi-active here and there, but I don't think there's an official group anymore.
Jeremiah?
But to clarify, there are leaseholders that are a part of the group.
Yeah, I'm just curious about the old leaseholders association.
Jeremiah? Lynn?
Yep.
Dana?
This is great.
Okay.
I'll add, as far as like the leaseholders are concerned, I am trying to work with a couple of the other sub-lease owner businesses that have been interested in talking about subjects that have to do with just the Embarcadero, and we're possibly going to put together some kind of organization that represents the Embarcadero leaseholders.
You mean for this process?
No, not for this for this process, but in answer to, was there a leaseholders? I don't know of any. I know that there was one, but I've had a lot of people interested, and now that we had the recent HAB thing where Paula Radke and there were other people who were interested in this particular position. Now we know of each other and that we know that we want to be a part of it and have a voice, and so we're trying to connect and create something like that.
Do you think it's appropriate for the Harbor Advisory Board to ask you to wait until the update work, your update work is over before you do that?
Before I become a part of any entity like that?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
No, I'm asking you if you think that's reasonable.
I I'll have to think that over, but if that's what you think is the right thing for me to do as a HAB representative, then I am okay with that.
I don't know that it's necessary.
Okay.
I just know that the board is crystal clear that Mr. Blackford is not a member at large when he participates in that group, and you are not a leaseholder when you participate in that group. So I leave it to you to decide what you think is correct.
Okay. I think that if I were involved in anything like that, that I could take off that particular hat and assume my responsibilities to each.
I just wanted to ask the question.
All right. Thanks.
I'll leave it to you. So I have a question for the two of you. The Harbor Advisory Board has talked a great deal about the needs, its opinion that aspects of the lease management, city's lease management policy for these properties be updated. And we've talked a good deal about the audit process, where we think that the board has said that it's not frequent enough and it's not vigorous enough. Rigorous enough is probably a better way to put it. Also, we've expressed our concern about lease site inspections or the lack thereof. We've talked about, the board has talked about lease sites operating in conformity with the contractual agreements for buildings use, maintenance, signage, access, and all that sort of thing. We've talked about our abiding concern that the Tidelands Trust commercial leases conform with the state mandate that they be at fair market, which, of course, is a moving target. As time goes on, that number goes up, not down, usually, unless we're in a major depression. And we've also, the board has also talked about its interest in making sure that there is some sort of commercially standard lease calendar term. The board has commented over the years that 50 years is entirely inappropriate in its opinion. Of course, those are all gone. Those Pipkins are gone. But, I mean, that was what got us to thinking about it. So a commercially standard lease calendar term. In your experience so far with the working group, have you seen those topics? Do you think those topics will be addressed?
Absolutely. They're part of the outline. And we will get to them when appropriate.
Yeah, I feel that they will be addressed. And, in fact, some of those topics exist in the current policy that we're looking to tighten up and make more vigorous than what's existing currently, including the current policy says that the city shall undertake the inspections every 5 years and charge back the leaseholders if not handled. So working with the existing framework of what we have and bringing that forward and working to improve on that, I'm sure that we'll have better definition from there.
Okay. If you're happy, we're happy. Okay. Anything else on this agenda item? No? Okay. So that brings us to C6. Harbor Advisory Board schedule for the 2019 calendar year, most particularly staff's recommendation that the Harbor Advisory Board cancel the regular March and July 2019 meetings for reasons stated in the staff report, and that the regular March meeting be scheduled for a date other than, I think it's March 7, if I remember correctly. Yeah, some other date. Okay, so, Eric, I think this is self-explanatory, but, I mean, your staff report's crystal clear. Do you want to just tell us anything else before we deliberate? Okay.
Negative.
Okay, so I'm looking for a motion to take the staff's recommendation to cancel the regular March 7, the regular March meeting, and the regular July 2019 meetings.
So moved.
Okay. Second? Yep. Jeremiah, moved and seconded. Any discussion? Seeing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. Carries. So now we're looking for a motion to schedule a special meeting in March. We're not talking about taking a bi-month in March, but Eric anticipates, as he explained to us, that he will not be here. He'll be in beautiful downtown Washington, D.C., cavorting with all of those good folks back there. So I would suggest if it works for Eric, I would suggest the next Thursday, which is
14th.
The 14th. Does that work for you, Eric?
Yes.
Or do you want to push out farther?
No, the 14th will work. We'll probably not make it a heavy agenda.
Well, if we decided we wanted a heavy agenda, what date works for you?
Does the board have any preference one way or another on a particular week either?
Anybody got any blackout dates?
If we're trying to stick with Thursdays, it's the 14th, 21st, or 28th.
I'm sorry, say it again, Dana.
I'd say the very end of the month is blackout day, 30th and 31st. I won't.
Yeah, well, we don't want to go that far because that's just in any case, because we're pushing right up against April. Okay. Jeremiah?
No.
You don't care? Okay. So, Eric, what's your preferred date? It's your schedule. That we're accommodating.
I 14th will work. We need to make sure the vet's all is available. And Jim.
Okay.
Sure.
So
it is,
I hear a motion to schedule. Wait. It's to schedule a special harbor advisory board meeting. For March 14th, 2019. You can't move to approve. You can make a motion. I move that we have that we schedule a special Harbor Advisory Board meeting for March 14th, and then we look for a second. And if we get the second, then we can approve it.
Okay.
March 14th, 2019.
Okay. I second that motion.
Perfect. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Carries.
That's good. And it's still going to be a special meeting. Even
yes,
though it's,
I said special meeting.
And you'll have to do a special sign.
That was the motion.
Thingamajiggy for
that
it. Yeah.
The motion was special meeting.
Yep.
Which I'm sure Lori was going to help me with because I'm in it. Enable. Okay, so that brings us to the last item, which is declaration of future agenda items. Do we have any agenda items that anyone would like to declare for the list? Okay. Anybody? Okay. I would like to suggest one, and that is that we declare as a future agenda item that we schedule the regular HAB meetings to begin at 5:30 p.m. as opposed to 6 p.m. I just said we're going to I just want to agendize it. That's all. So we can chat about it. Okay? Any objections to that? Any objections to being being declared as a future agenda item? Okay. So declared. Well, that's true. Okay. Anything else before we move to adjourn? Cherise, make a motion to adjourn, please. I move that the meeting be adjourned. Perfect. 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 Wait a second before you walk out of here. Any discussion? Seeing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. Carries. Thank you very much. Thank you.